Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by MyMumble.com, one of the leading voice chat service providers with locations all over the world. MyMumble offers free 5-seat voice chat service for life, as well as higher capacity plans for any group that requires a secure environment for confidential communication. Listeners of The Organic View can receive 15% off on monthly recurring power servers by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. For more promotional offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. Welcome to this week's segment of the Neonicotinoid View. On today's show, Tom and I are going to talk about the new EPA proposal to protect bees, the partnership between Bayer Crop Science and Earth Conservation Seed Company to create pollinator habitat, and more conflicting information about the impact of neonicotinoids. But first, I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Tom Theobald. Good afternoon, Tom, and welcome again.
Good afternoon, June. I'm glad to be back.
Tom, how are things going with your hives this week?
Well, we'd had a fairly strong honey flow going on, and that's tapered off a bit. But a major honey flow for us is the second cutting of the alfalfa, and that's yet to come. So the season is still unfolding.
Thanks, Tom. The first topic for today is in regards to a comment period extension for a new EPA proposal to protect bees from acutely toxic pesticides. This was published on July 22, 2015, and it says EPA is extending the comment period on its proposed plan to prohibit the use of all highly toxic pesticides when crops are in bloom and bees are present under contract for pollination services. Initially released on May 29, 2015, the plan also recommends that states and tribes develop pollinator protection plans and best management practices. The 30-day extension period ends on August 28th and will be announced in the Federal Register. Please visit the regulatory docket at EPA-HQ-OPP-2014-0818 to read the plan and submit comments. So, Tom, what is your view of this proposal?
You know, it's hard to know where to start. They've extended the comment period, but for what purpose is not clear. Most beekeepers and most environmentalists have made comments on various topics for years, and the experience is that if it conflicts with what the EPA wants to do in the first place, they simply ignore the comments. They're required by law to have a comment period, and the fact that they've extended it for a month makes them look like they're being generous, but really it's irrelevant, I think. It's important that beekeepers and others make the comments for the record, but we don't expect much. And we'll get into a little more detail about what the proposal is to protect the bees, and I think people will understand a little better after we've had that discussion.
Well, it's interesting. There are a number of comments already that have been posted, and some of the comments are in support, some of them obviously are not, but it will be interesting to see exactly how EPA utilizes all the feedback.
Yes, it will.
There was an article that appeared in Pest Control Technology's website, and it was in their July 2015 issue, and it says National Pollinator Strategy, EPA Proposals Take Science-Based Approach. Now, it's quite interesting when you take a look at this article, and it talks about imidacloprid, and it says, imidacloprid does not significantly harm honeybee colonies at real-world dosage levels, and they quote research from the University of Maryland. Now, Tom, you have been talking about imidacloprid for years. What is your take on this?
Well, I think this isn't journalism, this is fiction, you know, and what they're commenting on is that the White House Task Force report, and I think one of the statements that they make in this article at the outset really tells you where they're coming from, and what they say is, years of work behind the scenes by industry advocates paid off big time. And it did pay off big time because the White House Task Force report really accomplishes little or nothing. They have completely avoided what is the major driving force in these losses and these environmental damages, which are the systemic pesticides. And they've called for more research, more time. We have hundreds of studies that implicate these chemicals in these bee losses, and they've called for more research. They have committed themselves to reduce the bee losses, the annual bee losses, to 15% by within 10 years, but they present no plan for accomplishing that. They say that they're going to increase the monarch butterfly population to 2.5 million, but again, they have no plans underway to accomplish that. It's really just a lot of wordsmithing and no substance, and it's a great disappointment. And if the White House accepts this, I think the White House is complicit in this deception.
A year ago, they issued this whole memorandum, and Tom, what action was taken?
Well, they were supposed to have had their report done by the end of the year, by the end of December. And it didn't come out until June, almost a year in the works. And again, as I said, it really has no substance whatsoever. They've called for more research money. They want to extend this out further. And as they said in the article that we talked about earlier, years of work behind the scenes by industry advocates paid off big time. The chemical industry got exactly what they wanted, which was nothing.
Further down in the article, it says bees prefer foods tainted with neonicotinoids, which is chemically similar to nicotine, perhaps indicating an addictive attraction similar to the one humans have with nicotine. And they're referencing a study that was conducted at Newcastle University in the UK.
Well, it's interesting because it does appear that the presence of the neonicotinoids is attractive to the pollinators. Now, they don't have to be attracted to these pesticides to be damaged by them, but the fact that they are, to whatever degree, means that the damage is only increased.
Further down in the article, it says colony die-off this past winter was 29%, an improvement from the winter before, and they're citing Purdue University. But high summer losses added up to more than a 40% total annual loss in managed honeybee colonies, and they cited the University of Maryland. Now, Tom, can you remind our listeners what happened last year with the beekeeping community that began actually in January with the almond pollination?
Well, let's talk about the EPA's proposal to protect pollinators, which you mentioned in the introduction. They're touting this as further efforts to protect the pollinators, and what they're talking about is further scrutiny of pesticide applications for situations where bees are under contract. And this apparently is the result of the bee kills last year in the almonds, where 85,000 colonies of bees were killed outright and over 400,000 were negatively affected to one degree or another. The interesting thing is here, this was not a violation of the pesticide labels or the pesticide laws. The applicators were following directions and they were using chemicals that had no bee caution. The problem lay in the fact that these had never been properly researched by the EPA. They were used in a tank mix, and when they were mixed together, they became toxic, and we saw this tremendous bee kill. Well, the EPA's response to that is to propose further restrictions and scrutiny of the growers, the farmers, who have bees under contract. And what they've done is they've created even greater friction between the beekeepers and their clients, their people who contract with them. These are the people who are the most careful. And what the EPA is proposing is nothing new. The chemicals that they're talking about already have bee cautions, restrictions, so there's nothing new here. And in fact, what they're doing is they're ignoring the seriousness of the problem. They're saying, well, you can't spray these things, you can't use these things on blooming crops. And that may work fine if you have a chemical that has a residual of 6 or 7 hours, but we're talking about systemic pesticides that may last for weeks, months, or years. And avoiding spraying during the bloom will have little effect on the ultimate consequences of these chemicals. The commercial applicators have spoken out quite clearly, and they've said that their problems are not with the people that they contract with for pollination. Their losses are coming from all the rest of agriculture, where there is no oversight, there is no enforcement, and that's where their losses are coming from. So this EPA effort is just another example of smoke and mirrors to give the impression that they're doing something when they're doing nothing. In fact, they're making the problem worse.
So, Tom, what would you recommend that EPA do?
Well, there are many things that the EPA can do. I think that the risk evaluation has to be done much better. For example, in the case of the almond kill last year, what the EPA should be doing is should be taking a closer look at tank mixes. There are thousands of different combinations that farmers are using, and they're mixing these things together in an attempt to economize, so they only have to make one pass over the field. But the 85,000, 400,000 colony problem last year was not because the users were not following the labels, because they were following the labels. It's because the EPA didn't properly investigate these chemicals to begin with. We've heard nothing about tank mixes from the EPA. They apparently are not looking at that at all. Rather, they want to propose this, what they say, is an effort to protect the pollinators, which really is without substance. It's just more words without substance, and the bee losses are going to continue. The industry would like us to believe that the losses have diminished, and they have not diminished. In fact, they get worse every month. The clearest example we have of that, I think, is the article that came out this month in the California Lawyer. And commercial beekeeper Jeff Anderson is quoted as saying, in the spring of this year, he had 3,200 colonies. He now has 600 colonies, and those colonies are not particularly healthy. That's the situation that commercial beekeepers are faced with, and the EPA is doing little or nothing to address these problems.
What steps should EPA take, though, in order to rectify these problems so that moving forward in the future, they won't make the same mistake?
Well, I think they need to do much better risk assessment, okay? The risk assessment part of it. They do need to do much better risk enforcement, and that's critical to this discussion as well, because the chemicals are being misused, the labels are being violated, tank mixes are being made that are very, very damaging, and the EPA is doing nothing. Their oversight is absent. They do not enforce the pesticide laws, and as a consequence, we're seeing these tremendous losses.
The next topic is about a partnership between Bayer Crop Science and Ernst Conservation Seeds to create a pollinator habitat. Now, it's interesting. There have been a couple of efforts to make these gigantic habitats that encompass a great amount of land. I think the last one that we heard about was for the monarchs, and they were trying to make this pathway so that the monarchs could forage and survive. The problem is, how can the pollinators survive when the land is contaminated with these chemicals?
Well, they very carefully have avoided that subject, and that was one of the things that the White House Task Force recommended, was this habitat improvement, planting flowers for the bees, and that sounds good, and how could you argue with that? Planting flowers for the bees and creating habitat. But what they conveniently overlook is strong evidence that the environment has been massively contaminated. The soil and the groundwater has been contaminated at levels that are damaging to not only the pollinators, but many other life forms. And they have completely disregarded that. And habitat may not be habitat. It may be additional killing fields. We don't know. What surveys have been done, without exception, have shown these neonicotinoids in the soil and the groundwater in nearly every sample taken and at levels that would cause problems for pollinators and other forms of life.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting that they are trying to protect the bees, so they say, by planting plants that will attract pollinators. However, in the same breath, they're still selling the very chemicals that by design were created to kill bees and other insects.
Well, what the danger is those plants that are being planted to create habitat will draw up these chemicals at damaging levels. And there's a study that just came out just recently about the fact that 70% of the pollen loads coming into colonies contain these neonicotinoids. 70%. How can we expect the bees and other pollinators, the monarchs, the beneficial insects, how can we expect them to survive under conditions such as these? And it's being completely ignored.
Well, the bottom line is that they can plant all the plants that they want, but if they take a look at what's going on in China, which was documented in the film More Than Honey by Marcus Imhoff, they have to hand pollinate for a reason. Yeah, the land looks pretty, there's a lot of flowers, but they have to hand pollinate because it's too toxic of an environment for the bees to thrive. So that's what we're looking at. I'm so happy that he was able to document it, but that is our future. That is the reality.
Well, I think the best reference point we have, and the one that's gotten the most press, is the decline of the monarch butterfly. 90% in the last 20 years. And the only reason we haven't seen that same decline with the honeybee is because of the actions of beekeepers who are trying to keep those populations up. But if we lose the beekeepers, we will quite rapidly lose the bees on the same level as the monarch butterfly. And we are losing the beekeepers. Although we've had a tremendous influx of new beekeepers, hobbyist beekeepers with a small number of colonies, none of these beekeepers are going to survive unless we change the conditions under which they're trying to keep the bees.
Tom, could you share with our listeners exactly what you're doing to keep your bees alive?
Well, it's a little beekeeping wonky, but I do what's called double queening, and I take the new packages in the spring and I double queen them with an existing colony, and the result of that is both halves benefit from the collaboration. And then 2 weeks ago, I separated those two halves, and now I have a colony that has a very high population of fielders and can take advantage of whatever is out there, whatever honey flow. And I have a strong new colony that, if it survives the winter, will go online next year as a producer. So I'm using every beekeeping technique that I can to try to keep my numbers up, but I'm afraid, if I'm honest, I have to say that the future does not look good. I don't think it's going to matter just how well I do the beekeeping, because we're sending these bees out into an environment that's increasingly hostile to life, and they cannot survive.
Tom, years ago, when people were concerned about DDT, there was a lot of public outrage. There were a number of activists who tried to get DDT banned, but yet it's almost as if history is repeating itself, and the same tactics that were used by industry to keep DDT on the market are now being deployed in regards to neonicotinoids. Could you just take a step back in time and share with our listeners exactly what happened with the birds and with wildlife when DDT was being sprayed so massively?
Well, one thing that almost everybody remembers is the eggshell thinning and the reduction in the raptors. The bald eagle was the classic example. But DDT had negative effects that were far beyond the eggshell thinning of birds, and it was ultimately banned in 1972.
Tom, how many years did it take for the public to finally get DDT banned?
The opposition to DDT and the recognition of its damages began in the early 50s, culminated probably with the Silent Spring by Rachel Carson in 1962. Was finally banned in 1972. But compared to the toxic effects of DDT, what's being done today with the neonicotinoids is quite literally billions of times the toxic effect of DDT. And they want to cover that up. They don't want us to be talking about that. They don't want anyone to recognize that. The toxic equivalent of these systemic pesticides, based on the evidence that we're able to find, the toxic equivalent is equivalent to 400 billion pounds of DDT every year on the land. In the year of highest usage, and we've talked about this before, in the year of highest usage, 1959, 80 million pounds of DDT were used, and we know what the damaging consequences of that were. We're looking at chemicals that are being put on the land at thousands of times the rate, billions of times the toxicity, and do they want to talk about it? No. The task force report completely ignores the role that neonicotinoids are playing in these losses. And there are hundreds of scientific papers that have shown the connection between the environmental damage and the systemic pesticides. And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, that agency that we look to protect us and the environment, simply ignores it. Now, you have to ask yourself, why? Why are they conducting themselves this way?
Well, weren't they created by the Nixon administration to protect the environment? Wasn't EPA created because of what happened with DDT?
Exactly, yes. A direct result of Silent Spring.
I was an infant when everything happened, but I know, especially for our younger listeners who were just born maybe 15 years ago, this is history that, you know, we have to read about, but you actually lived through it. So that's why I'm asking you to talk about it, because this is something that the American public has seen before.
Well, when DDT came out, we were told that it was harmless, and they would quite literally fog crowds. I mean, there are any number of videos from that period that show fogging trucks going through picnic areas where people are eating and spraying this stuff. I can remember that. I can remember when they would come through the neighborhoods with the fog trucks and fog the neighborhood, and we were all told that it was relatively harmless. Well, we're being told that the neonicotinoids are harmless as well, and it's very, very discouraging and frustrating, because here we are again, and the consequences may be even more serious than what we saw with DDT.
Well, hopefully the EPA will take into consideration the public comments that are not in support of the use of neonicotinoids and perhaps make changes in the future as far as the regulation process and do more testing before the product is allowed to be sold on the market. But that remains to be seen.
I don't think we're going to see any changes. And what we're seeing, for example, this proposal to regulate the use of chemicals for bees under contract, the EPA is going to do nothing because they've been completely captured by the industries they're supposed to regulate. And they're a marketing agency for the chemical companies, and the quote that we used earlier, I think, is appropriate, and that is, years of work behind the scenes by industry advocates paid off big time, and they continue to pay off. And we see no management oversight whatsoever with regard to these decisions, up through and including Congress. This is a system that is completely out of control.
Well, Tom, it remains to be seen what happens, and especially with an upcoming election year. It'll be interesting to see if any of the presidential candidates address any of these issues. So far, not one of them has talked about it or has any plan, nothing. So I hate to say it, but to be continued. Tom, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, June. It's always a pleasure.
And folks, please tune in each week as Tom and I continue to explore the impact of neonicotinoids on the environment with this special series called The Neonicotinoid View. Thanks for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.